Well, you're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our first guest is going to be Anne Laurent, who is departing from the city as the community development director to head back to where she hailed from, which was Los Alamos, New Mexico. We'll have her in just a few minutes and give you an update of the plans for the future for that position. Well, good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. Our first guest is Anne Laurent. After 4 years in her role as Park City Municipal's Community Development Director, Anne Laurent is departing City Hall for a new job with her old employer. Anne joins us now to give us an update on some of the projects and initiatives her department oversees. Good morning, Anne. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you. Good morning.
Yes, so you're taking a job as the Public Works Director with the Los Alamos County?
Yes. Los Alamos is a combined city-county, so it's all municipal functions.
Okay. Well, congratulations. And tell us a little bit about how that job will differ from what you've been doing here as Community Development Director.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about the projects we're working here, but certainly it's when I left, there was a little bit of a reorganization. My background's largely project management and architecture. So when I left, all the projects were transferred over to Public Works. So I was there for 7 years doing a very large capital initiative, and they're in a process of gearing up for another large capital project initiative, and they're excited to have me back to take the helm on that. But it's also a lot of other departments under Public Works, so it'll be a great experience to broaden my background as well.
So, yeah, so let's move on to the projects you are working on here. I know you want to get to that. The city will likely be looking to fill your position soon, I would presume. What does it mean to the community development director to have, have that open? And what will they be looking at as far as overseeing down the road the projects that you're leaving and where they are in the process?
Well, I know that the mayor and Matt Dias are working on that and looking at options and discussing it. So it's really, my understanding is TBD at this point, how they're going to move forward. I do know that there's obviously a variety of different functions I've performed. And my job, changed over the time that I was here as well. Initially, it didn't have affordable housing, but that certainly became a big focus of my role here. And that grew. And then the other piece of it is there's just certainly some large initiatives going on from development, both from the city and the private sector with the Arts and Culture District and the base developments. So how those get staffed is what they're discussing. And then there's just the general support and oversight of the community development departments. Certainly.
Yeah. So those are three pretty big projects, from affordable housing, the arts and culture, and then the base developments. So where are we in terms of the, hitting goals on affordable housing?
Right. So on affordable housing, I think for those of you who have been following, and I think Jason Glidden will be on at 8:30, so you can follow up with some conversation with him. But, certainly we've been successful over the last 4 years going from talking about it to implementing it. Park City Heights got going. It was not under construction when I started. The city purchased Central Park condos from a private developer and deed restricted those. We completed 1450 Park Avenue project, which was under design when I started, and Woodside Phase 1, which we're in the final phases of getting ready to make those available for sale. And then Woodside Phase 2 was really the biggest project the city undertook as being the developer. And there was, I think you're aware, there were some appeals and some rehearings of some issues. And at this point, we're moving forward and anticipate that starting breaking ground next spring.
So these projects that are underway here, mm-hmm. will be taken over by the new person coming in, to your knowledge, or has that been decided yet?
I don't think any of that's been decided. Jason Glidden has been the main point of contact on those projects, and that will remain the same. So. And Dave Gustafson's also done a great job supporting in the field and his experience in construction.
Okay. And as far as how things have changed since you started, you said that it wasn't really part of what you were doing when you came in. Have you been as far as developing your skill set and understanding how all of that works and encouraging developers to be a part of that. Has that been a challenge? Has that been difficult to enable and sort of engage the opportunities there?
Not sure I completely understand the question, but I think in general, because I had a housing background prior to coming here, and when Phyllis Robinson left, I think it was just made sense to transition it and get that up and running. And then I hired Jason. He was in special events and supported him getting up to speed on working on housing, and he's doing great. So that was just because of my background. Initially, transportation planning was under community development, and given the heightened focus on parking and its relationship to transit, that moved over to the team with Public Works and Public Utilities, and Alfred Knotts, as you're aware, is in charge of that. So it was just some natural reorganization that happened over time based on, you know, staff skill set. And I just anticipate that depending on how they move forward, and you'll see more reorganization, and depending on what kind of focuses they want to make, and how they want to move these projects and what phases they're in. So I anticipate it being a little bit longer and before they actually know exactly how they're going to fill and define the role. But I do think that they're, you know, talking about how to redefine it and what focus is, and maybe it's multiple positions, right? Or maybe there's just different ways of meeting the need, because in a community like Park City, where it's just every day it's kind of changing, the demands are changing, the expectation is immediate responses, and so I think the idea is to continue to remain flexible and nimble and responsive to those demands.
So how has the city done, you know, recently in terms of meeting the goals, the numbers of units that they had set you know, forth several years ago?
Right. So we've presented a few times to City Council and at their work sessions, and we're on track to be able to produce 500 of the 800 goal. And we have been staff has been very clear, even when the goal was first initiated, that we haven't identified yet projects and capacity to get to the 800. So there's, of course, more conversation about regional partnerships. I think, you know, obviously it came up a lot in the social equity conversations, as well as the visioning initiatives that are going on right now. So I anticipate through those conversations, them talking about what are they going to do to get to that additional 300, and thinking outside the box and a little differently than what we've been able to do with our current current funding, which is we have to use that funding within our city limits. And what we do is we recycle money from one project into the next. And at some point, the RDA will expire. And so there, obviously, we're also looking for either opportunities to incentivize that don't actually require funding from the taxpayer dollars, or maybe, you know, there's a lot, we've been watching very closely the state conversations and where they're going with promoting affordable housing. But it's not only a Park City issue, it's a state issue and a national issue at this point.
Yeah, it truly is. Well, let's transition just to talk a little bit about the Arts and Culture District. Where are you leaving things?
Oh, okay.
With that?
Well, where we are right now is we are assembling applications to submit for land use. And it's anticipated there'll be several land use applications needed for that development. One is a master plan development application. The other one is a conditional use permit for residential use, because we've always anticipate housing to be incorporated into the project as a mixed-use project, as well as it will have an affordable housing obligation in and of itself, and a conditional use permit because the frontage protection zone that runs along Kearns Boulevard, there's 100 feet back from the property line that if you want to construct or do anything in that 100 feet, it just requires an additional conditional use permit. So and then a subdivision. Right now, there's several parcels that make up that 5 acres. And so our plan is to relay that out. And it's always been that Sundance and Kimball Art Center will always have their own location and their own property lines. And so and then the city will maintain ownership of the rest. So we've got that ready to go. And we're just in the final stages of discussing how to move forward with the partnership and some of those agreements. So that will need to take place. But I'm very excited and look forward to that information being able to, for the community to see it, because I do think it's 2 years of work that unfortunately I'm not going to get the benefit of showing to the public.
That's
but
too bad. That's got to be a little hard.
But that's okay. That's the way it rolls.
They could send you pictures, I suppose.
Oh, I'm sure. I'll stay close to it, I'm sure.
So that's a lot of planning, I mean, mm-hmm. that you've just outlined. And that's all been finalized, and now has the city approved all of that?
No. So we're at a point where if we can get some of the agreements between the different partner developers together, then each of the respective governing boards, so that would be, you know, City Council or the Kimball Arts Center Board or Sundance Board, would all have to approve moving forward.
Okay. And has Sundance and Kimball, are they as far along in this process? Are they ready to start to show some of their plans?
We've been working with them in partnership, and that's part of where we're discussing now, is just the timing of when people are ready to move forward and how.
Any sense of when the project will actually start?
The goal and the timeline we've always put out there is we anticipate the potential next year of starting some offsite utilities. There's some related projects such as the Munchkin Road redesign that we are in the plan. We have done some initial planning on as well that we think is important part of the project and the whole district success. So. We're moving forward with those, but then I think I think we're on a path right now where we don't anticipate seeing buildings coming down until 2021, but it could be a little sooner. It really just depends.
Okay. And just real quickly, finally, the base development for both resorts have been discussed, and mm-hmm. I don't imagine they're too far along yet in the planning process. We really haven't seen anything coming from Vail or Park City Mountain Resort, and Deer Valley has, of course, talked about it for years, developing that base area. Where do things stand? What are you leaving behind? And what's going to happen when all that gets taken over? Will that become a priority for the person stepping into your shoes?
Well, absolutely. Bruce Erickson has a very strong background in resort planning, and he has a strong legacy and a history with the base developments and the development agreements that are already in place for both the ski resorts. So, we've got a very strong planning team right now. So we've been having a lot of conversations, and we are looking at those development agreements very closely, making sure we understand them. But we do not know exactly what's going to come forward at this point yet. No applications have been submitted, but we do anticipate it happening at some point. But it's going to be up to the whoever the developers are to determine the timing on that. That won't necessarily be city-driven.
And do you expect that workforce housing requirements will be included in those proposals? Not affordable housing, but workforce housing.
Right. So, I think there's, I'm not sure when you say workforce, are you thinking more seasonal housing for the resort employees?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Both the development agreements have affordable housing obligations already written into them. So to the extent those apply, those will apply. To the extent that there are asks of the resort developers outside those development agreements, it'll just have to be determined at that time what the new housing resolution and how that applies and how that will be affected by just the development or how much the ski area operations come into effect. So that I anticipate, between parking, transportation, affordable housing, whenever we get the applications, it's hard to imagine that those aren't going to be big topics of conversation no matter what.
And is a transit center still planned for that base area for Park City Mountain?
Right now, the development agreement is very clear that it needs to maintain that existing transit location. It could be redesigned or reconceived. It's actually the drop-off itself is not on the base lots. It's actually a different ownership. It's owned by that condominium area development right there around the ice rink. That separate owners, but there is language in the current development agreement on how that has to be maintained.
Okay. Anything else that you want to say about your departure and leaving behind?
No, just that really enjoy my time here and still plan on coming back and playing as often as I can, and look forward to these projects moving forward, and just say thank you, Park City.
Thank you for that update. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right, enjoy. Oh, and you're not leaving, Anne, until the 1st of November.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yes, okay. Three more weeks.
3 more weeks. Okay. Yeah. A lot to do in the next 3 weeks, I'm guessing.
I'm doing all I can.
Okay. Thanks again for coming by. That's Anne Laurent. She's the Park City Community Development Director, outgoing, and she joined us here this morning for an update. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It's 8:28, and my next guests this morning are Park City Senior Planner Hannah Tyler, along with Housing Manager Jason Glidden. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
So the Park City Planning Commission meets Wednesday for a special meeting, primarily to discuss updates to the 2017 housing plan. And Hannah Tyler and Housing Manager, both people who will be attending and participating in that meeting. And I guess you guys, if you could give us a little bit of an update, Hannah, maybe you can start off talking about the update from the 2017 housing plan to the 2020 housing plan. And why is this happening now? What's going on?
I'll jump in because it's more related to housing and some of the changes that have happened at the state level. Last year, the legislature enacted Senate Bill 34, which is the Affordable Housing Modification Bill. What that did was modify previous bills that had been passed requiring municipalities to develop and submit moderate income housing plans to the state. Park City has been compliant for many years. We've had a plan for many years. But what this did was it added a lot more definition to what they wanted included in the plan, and also added a little bit of teeth to the plan, and linking it to state transit and transportation funds. So we're going to Planning Commission tomorrow night with our updated plan, which we most recently updated in 2017. Previously, the requirements required that these housing plans be reviewed and submitted every 2 years. And one of the changes that they added was that they wanted this done on an annual basis. And as part of that plan, it's required that the plan be incorporated into the general plan. Hence why we're going to Planning Commission, for something to be included into the general plan, we first must have a recommendation from the Planning Commission that will then go to City Council.
So our housing plans have never been incorporated into a general plan?
We've had elements of housing strategies in the general plan since the general plan was updated a few years back. So we've had housing elements in that general plan. As far as this housing plan, it was not incorporated into the general plan. So we're going back to do that right now. And we need to do this by December 1st, hence why we have this special meeting.
December 1st.
That's correct. The requirements is that any municipality that is required to submit these plans must do it by December 1st to be eligible for those transit and transportation funds from the state.
And what kind of numbers are we looking at for those funds?
You know, I honestly don't know for the city, to be honest. That's a question that more Alfred Knotts would probably have to answer. But we don't want to take that chance anyways. We have a plan. We've always had a plan, like I said. We just needed to make sure that this got incorporated as part of the general plan.
Sure. And you had mentioned moderate income housing, which to me sounds different from affordable.
Yeah, it's just terminology. It means the same thing. Moderate income is 80% AMI and below, or average median income and below. So our definition of affordable housing is the same as the moderate income housing. It's just the state uses that term instead of affordable housing.
So we've always been we've talked so much about this AMI number and 80% and below. Is that a realistic number for most people who work and the wages that they earn here? If you're a teacher, a police officer, I mean, is that realistic? Because we've heard anecdotally things that, you know, school teachers can't even afford that.
Yeah, I think one of the things as far as reporting to the state is that they do break it down by different AMI levels that go below 80%. So they have the 80%, the 60%, and then they have a 30% and below. And so we'll be trying to track those numbers as far as our inventory. The plan, you know, requires that that addresses your current inventory. You've got to have a tally of your current inventory. And then you also have to understand where you need to be over the next 5 years. How much more housing do you need to produce in order to get to a level where there isn't necessarily a need anymore? And then the last portion, obviously, is a plan to how you're going to reach those goals or reach those numbers. And as an additional change this year, what the state did was they actually put together a menu of 23 different strategies. And they're requiring that a municipality that's required to submit a plan incorporate at least three of those strategies in their plan. Now, if you have a fixed transit system, such as Park City, you have to have an additional strategy. So you have to have a total of four strategies incorporated.
Okay, so just getting back, and Laurent was in here just a minute ago, kind of transitioning out of the city and moving on to back to Los Alamos. But as the economic development director, she had commented that that our housing plan is about 500 of the 800 units that have been initially put out there as our goal. So can you kind of dissect that for our listeners and help us understand what is there a timing element with that? And what is that extra 300 units? Will that be coming along after a certain amount of time?
Or? Yeah, I think what Ann was getting at was that, you know, we have a goal of 800 units. And of that 800, we believe we've identified 500 of those units that should be developed over the next couple of years. Now, as a reminder, you know, we have this 800 goal. It's not that the city is going to develop 800 units. This goal, or to reach this goal, the city is only part of that solution or of reaching that goal. Part of our inclusionary housing, so when developments are created and require a master plan development, they'll have a housing requirement. So those that are built as part of those housing requirements will be included in that goal. And then any public or private partnerships that we may enter into to develop housing will be included in that goal. And then there are folks, you know, hopefully through some of the changes that we're looking at right now with the land management code, that we're going to help to incentivize developers to come in and produce affordable housing as well. So you talked about, you know, the resort bases, and as they develop, you know, there will be housing requirements. So those that are developed through those housing requirements will be included in that goal.
So is it your job, Jason, to kind of monitor that and see, you know, is it feasible that they can add that a certain number can be added by each development? I mean, is that part
of the housing department, you know, is this compliance. And so we have to go through and look at what is being proposed for development. And then there is through the housing resolution, it clearly states how those requirements are calculated. And so we work with the developers to calculate those numbers. And then as part of the housing development agreement that they enter into, a housing mitigation plan is put together that addresses not only what is the calculation, but how are they going to accomplish that requirement.
Okay, so just as a wrap up, moving forward, the housing plan will be incorporated into our land management code as a...
It'll be included into the general plan. Okay. So, but what we're looking at, one of the strategies we're looking at is making modifications to the land management code, such as parking reductions possibly, or density bonuses, those type of things that maybe will help to encourage the development of more affordable housing.
And you had mentioned we've been compliant already with the Senate Bill 34 requirements. So
absolutely.
It's not like we've got to scramble as a community to make up for that.
Absolutely not. Nope.
Okay, great. So let's talk about like parking and open space and setback requirements. And maybe Hannah, this is where you can kind of come in and how to incentivize developers to build more affordable housing with all of those elements in mind.
Yeah, I think Jason kind of touched on it, is I think the goal of just taking a step back and looking at that 800 goal is we're just really trying to look at this from every angle. And some of those angles could be incentivizing it through the land management code, through, further reductions in parking or open space, like you said, or setbacks. I think the biggest thing is making sure that these developments, if they do receive an incentive, they still blend in with the neighborhood. I think that's something that the community would be worried about. And also I think the planning department and housing really care about, is we don't want housing to stick out like a sore thumb. We want it to be, you know, compliant and integrated into the community in a nice way. And so that's sort of what we're looking at as we look at these reductions and other opportunities for us to incentivize, whether it be a private property owner, you know, making an affordable accessory dwelling unit, or a larger developer simply producing more affordable housing than what's required in the code.
Okay. Okay. And of course, the idea that you want to try to develop this near transit areas so that people can avoid getting in their cars.
Yeah, I think that's an awesome, you know, another feature we could be looking at is, you know, what is your proximity to a bus stop and what can we get out of that? What incentive can we give you because of your proximity that maybe that is the reduction in the car in that situation, no parking or mm-hmm. something like that. So we're trying to look at it from all angles. We did hire Cascadia Partners, who is doing a land management code review for us with the master plan developments. And so we're looking to get their final report back in the next few months. And we're hoping that they're able to kind of work out some of those kinks and recommend to council further reductions in parking. They're going to look at density bonuses. I don't know if they're going to go full on height increases, but I think we have to look at the full picture of these projects before we can kind of check off any of those reductions.
Yeah, the height increase is a real limiting factor currently with our code.
Yes.
So how difficult is it to change that?
I think it's a more of a matter of us looking at the master plan development code is sort of an agreement between the city and a developer, looking at the land management code and where can we make small reductions in the underlying zoning requirements. And so I think for us, we'd like to set clear criteria where if you meet all of these, you are then eligible for a reduction. And we'd like to make those criteria clear enough that they're not, you know, hurting the neighbors or anything like that. So that's sort of how we're going to look at it. It's going to be case by case basis.
Sure. Okay, and of course, with the new developments coming on with the base areas along with the art and culture districts, what kind of opportunities do you see there? How does that play into it?
You know, I think we won't know until we make that new code. And so, you know, in the absence of that new code, I can't tell you what they would be eligible for. But I think we're willing to work with, you know, both base areas and the arts and culture district to try to get more housing specifically than what's required in the underlying code. However, knowing that our code is not incentive based right now, we won't have any mechanisms to give them, you know, extra height or anything under the current code until we go through a future code revision.
Okay, and this consulting firm is hoping to get some kind of more detailed suggestions to the city by what, the end of the year? Is that what you said?
Probably maybe January.
Okay.
We're kind of working on a scheduling issue with them right now. We're trying to get them to both Planning Commission and Council, so we got to find a week that they can hit both of those. So it's more, we're trying to get them out in front of both of those boards that are super important to our land use code specifically.
Okay. And so this work session, what basically do you want to walk away with?
The work session tomorrow.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think it's just giving the Planning Commission a chance to go through and look at the plan, see if there's any revisions or edits or additions that they would like to suggest, and then for them to, in a sense, give their blessing, saying, yes, we think this is a good plan to move forward and incorporate into the general plan and move it on to City Council for final approval.
Okay. And Ed, do you anticipate any pushback?
No, I don't think there's any pushback. I think we're all on the same page as far as the need for affordable housing, and we all want to do our best and find all the different tools, in a sense, because it does take multiple tools to develop this affordable housing. So there may be some new ideas, and we may, which would be great. We may not include them in this plan, but at least it may be a brainstorming session where they can suggest a couple things. And we'll probably come back and check in with Planning Commission after the first of the year and get some more of those ideas and things. You know, we're always looking for new ideas. If anybody has new ideas, they can bring them to us, and we'll start to investigate them and see how feasible they are for our area.
Okay, I'm going to be calling you later.
All righty.
I've got some ideas.
Great. I'm all ears.
Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you.
That is Hannah Tyler. She is with the Park City Planning Department, Senior Planner, and Housing Manager Jason Glidden. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Well, good morning. It is the KPCW Local News Hour, News Time 8:43. My next guest is Carolyn Wara. She's Executive Director of the Recycle Utah And she's here. Well, we're calling it Recycle Utah Cardboard Discussion. That's where we're headed this morning because there are some big changes with the materials that are being accepted in China. And Recycle Utah's cardboard is now being recycled domestically. International markets are still playing a role, according to the notes I have here. And it looks like there's an impact with market pricing and demand. Thanks for coming by, Carolyn.
Hi, Carolyn. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. So we have started to feel some effects of China's green sword in 2018 and earlier this year. But where are we now? And what are we at the worst that is the worst that it's going to be, or is it going to get worse?
Gosh, I hope we're at the worst part. The good news in this whole story, I'll repeat myself very slowly, cardboard is still getting recycled. Recycle Utah is not landfilling any of your cardboard. We are still recycling it, but the markets have changed to such that now we pay to get it recycled. Whereas in the past, we would fill up the big machine at Recycle Utah, it's called the compactor, the machine that squishes it all. That would get full. We'll send it down to Salt Lake. We pay to get it to Salt Lake. And then there's some cardboard in there that has value. And the cardboard in there will help pay for the haul. It usually doesn't pay for the whole haul. The haul to Salt Lake is about $200. Usually there's not $200 worth of cardboard in there, but it helps offset our costs a little bit. We're at the point now that we send that cardboard down to get recycled. They weigh it and they say, it'll cost you this much to get this cardboard recycled. So there's a little too much cardboard in the market. The online shopping has gotten a little out of control. And it's a supply and demand market. And there's just too much cardboard out there. So we are still sending it down to be recycled. But to ensure it gets recycled, we do have to pay for it.
So is it paper recyclers that take care of it?
Yep. Basically? And there's three good paper recyclers in Salt Lake. So we're lucky and we're able to keep it domestic. But we're not the only ones with too much cardboard. So there's just too much cardboard. And with the domestic, the international market's not really playing a role anymore. All the cardboard stay in the U.S., which I think long-term will be a good thing. I think we're going to learn how to deal with our own materials and our own waste. We're just kind of in the painful part of learning what to do. And it's affecting us a little bit, so.
Yeah. So what are we expecting in terms of an increase to costs for recycling cardboard for the center?
Yeah, Recycle Utah is probably going to take on $6,000 to $10,000 extra this year if markets don't change. This is just paying to get cardboard recycled. So if you bring us cardboard, which many of you do, we asked you to take that in consideration. Drop a few bucks when you come to the center or even donate to us during Live PC, Give PC coming up November 8th. And we do have a few bin sponsors that sponsor the cardboard program that I want to thank. These three have been with us for a long time. Cole Sport, they're actually bringing us a ton of cardboard right now as they switch out their inventory for the winter. Molly Campbell with Summit Sotheby's Real Estate, she's been with us for a while. And Grand Valley Bank, these are some businesses that sponsor us. And if you're a business that wants to get in and bring us a lot of cardboard and help us, we appreciate it. So sounding the alarms a little bit, I'm trying to stay optimistic that markets will improve. But if you bring us cardboard, I really ask that you realize that this is costing us money to recycle your cardboard. And drop us a few bucks.
Yeah, so a couple questions. Just you'd mentioned that some of the cardboard has value and some doesn't. Can you tell us which cardboard has value and which doesn't?
All of our cardboard at Recycle Utah has value because it's so clean. We're kind of recycling markets at a point that the more recyclables that combine, think of your curbside or something, the more combined the recyclables are, the more chance they have to get contaminated. Maybe your yogurt container gets your cardboard dirty and then it gets to the recycling center and your cardboard is all soggy. That's going to be harder to recycle. Fortunately, at Recycle Utah, all of our cardboard is, baled and just cardboard. So it always goes to the markets and there's always a buyer for it. There's always value in it. Unfortunately, there's just too much out there for our cardboard to compete with now. So,
yeah. So what is the answer to that? I mean, we've got such a robust commercial shipping businesses, people buy things from all of the online, retailers now, and they're having cardboard come for the smallest little things. I mean, what is the answer?
I would say to not shop online altogether. That'd be the solution, shop local. There's some really cool local options, that Create Park City is a great place for Christmas shopping. Go to Salt Lake and go to the stores, go back to real shopping versus ordering online. I know ordering online is convenient. But with that, if you are going to order online, order, multiple things at a time. Maybe if you go to Amazon, put a few things in your cart and they'll come in one box versus three different boxes because, you wanted something on Monday and then you wanted something Wednesday, you wanted something Friday, try to do one
save
order.
Save up your online trips. Basically.
Yeah, totally. Fill up your cart a little bit online before hitting that submit order button. That can help a little bit because it'd be one box versus three. And then do recycle cardboard. I think don't stop recycling it because it's this way. Recycling 1 ton of cardboard saves 17 trees, 380 gallons of oil, 3 cubic yards of landfill space, and 7,000 gallons of water. So always still, I mean, if you're going to use cardboard, make sure you recycle it. It does make more sense than throwing it in our landfill. And it's one of the biggest space suckers in our Summit County landfill. So I'm going to say cardboard's hard to avoid at this point and where we're at, but there's things you can do, you know, bulk your orders together, keep recycling it, shop locally so you don't even have it in the first place.
Yeah, can you? I've heard rumors that you can take your cardboard, lay it down on your grass, and cover that up, and that you'll get rid of that Kentucky bluegrass.
I've actually done that myself, and it works amazing. Like, I dug through that cardboard down to the dirt, and the dirt, it's great. Inza told me to do it in my yard, and I tried it, and it works great.
Does it?
Okay. The tricky thing is you have to just use plain cardboard, no color or anything added to it. Like, as brown as simple, peel off the tape as you can get. And it's a great time to do that now with the winter, the snow coming. You can put it on your ground, and the snow will kind of soak down in the cardboard, and it'll decompose throughout the winter, and you'll wake up in the spring and have great new grass there.
Do you cover that with a barrier?
I had tons of weeds. I put the cardboard down. I put the cardboard on top of the weeds. I put the cardboard down, and I put some rocks on it to kind of hold the cardboard down, and then I put like a mulch layer on top.
Okay.
And just totally sitting in my yard. Yeah. It's great. Another way to get rid of cardboard.
You can dig through and plant.
I would cut holes in it if I want to plant something in it. Cut a little hole in the cardboard, and then the soil down beneath is, I cannot believe my soil got that great in just one summer. I did it probably back in June, and I looked at the soil last weekend, and it's great.
Okay.
So, yeah, if you're doing some end of fall gardening or landscaping, use some cardboard in your yard. Works great.
Looks like my chores just increased for the weekend.
And if you need cardboard, you can come to Recycle Utah. We'll give you any cardboard you want.
Okay. Well, good. So anything else? We're in the process of shifting all of these operations now back to the U.S. And domestically, the paper industry is improving, mill systems across North America. It does take time to build that capacity and bring it back up online. And can you talk any more about that and what that means for the future of our recycling efforts here?
Yeah, I mean, personally, I kind of see what China did as a good thing because I don't think it was a sustainable solution to send our waste across overseas. You know, that as a country, U.S. sending all the things we don't want to China and hoping they dispose of it correctly is not really a good way to go. So I think with them saying no back in 2017, I think it's actually making us deal with a lot of our waste ourselves in the U.S. And that employs a lot of jobs, you know, if a new recycling plant opens. And then we're finding creative ways. There's a lot of like waste to energy options out there. New paper mills are finding the need like, oh, you know, we need someone to recycle cardboard. Cardboard's not going away. Things are changing. So a lot of opportunities out there. And I feel like if we fast forward 5 years from now, we're going to be doing great in the U.S. I'm trying to be optimistic about it and think that we're headed in a good direction. And I think we're seeing the problems we made in the past, and we're going to make good solutions for them moving forward.
Yeah, great. And I think we have one more dumpster weekend coming up.
So if you are doing the yard work with your cardboard or anything like that, we do have dumpster days coming up October 24th, 25th, and 26th. It's from 9 until 4 each day. We do have a hard close at 4 because we got to pack everything up and close it down for the day. We have 2 bins outside. We have one for yard waste, which is like grass clippings, branches, et cetera. And then one for our large household trash. These are kind of large items that don't fit in your household bin. Kind of maybe think of a wood chair, a kid's play set that's not metal. We have volunteers out there that if anything is recyclable, we will put it in the right recycle bin. The things we do not take are refrigerators, car tires, or hazardous waste. Those 3 things can go to the Summit County Landfill. If you're a Summit County resident, and they're open 8 to 5 Monday through Saturday. They'll take those things from you. And then we get a lot of questions about what happens to the yard waste. It is composted. We work with Wild Harvest Farms, and then our Summit County landfill has a compost section. So depending on how many loads are going in or out, we always go to one of those options. So your yard waste is composted that day if you bring it to us. And then an extra addition to the dumpster days, we will be recycling electronics for free during these days. We had a sponsor from Dell come in, and they're going to pay for everything to get recycled October 25th or 24th, 25th, 26th from 9 until 4. So e-waste, yard waste, large trash, we'll take it all end of October.
Okay. Anything else?
We have green drinks coming up November 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. This is at Park City Storage. And we're talking with Mike Lures. He's the general manager for Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. And then Jody Jameson. We're talking kind of water and green cleaning. So put November 12th on your calendar and save the date for that.
And that's where?
Park City Storage out along 40.
Oh, okay. Great.
Great. Thank you, Carolyn.
Thank you much. That's Carolyn Wara. She's the executive director for Recycle Utah. Thanks so much for the update on cardboard. Everybody can keep recycling cardboard. That is the message.
And drop a buck if you can.
Drop a buck or two. Thank you. Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. It's 8:54. And on the line, let's see, I have Charlie Musselwhite. And he is here to give us an update on what we can expect with his performance at the Egyptian Theater this weekend. Thanks for calling in, Charlie.
I'm glad to be here. How y'all doing?
We're all good. We're all good. So tell us a little bit about your show this weekend.
Well, we play the blues, but some people think that blues is something sad, but no, it's actually to get rid of that feeling. It's about being happy and having a good time, and you know, you can dance to it or listen, or if you're, you know, talented, you could do both.
Yes.
We have a lot of fun.
Yeah. So are there any highlights that your fans can anticipate that you're going to bring on the weekend? And why don't you give us a rundown of the times and the days that you're going to be performing also?
Well, it's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Egyptian Theater in Park City. And I don't have the times in front of me, but I'm sure they're easy to find out.
We'll get them out there. It's probably 7:30, something along those lines. And
yeah.
Have you been to the Egyptian Theater to perform? It's a very intimate setting and just a beautiful environment. And
I've heard about it, but I haven't. I played Park City back in the 80s, but it wasn't at the theater. So I'm glad to be back.
Yeah. Yeah. So probably need to bring your snow boots because they're talking about some snow possibly this weekend. I apologize for that. And then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about who are you bringing with you? What's your band all about?
Well, my band is, they've been with me a long time. Matt Stubbs on guitar, Randy Bermudez on bass, and June Core on drums. And they're really great musicians, and they back me up really well. I really always can count on them. And we have so much fun on stage that the audience can't help but have fun. We love what we do, and we do it pretty good.
Yeah. Well, great. Anything else you want your fans or the people who are going to come and get to know you and become fans, anything else you want to say to them?
Well, we'll be out there. At least I'll be out in the lobby after the show to say hi to the people or sign autographs or have a conversation, take pictures or whatever. It's always nice to meet the fans.
Yes, it sure is. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Charlie Musselwhite, who's performing at the Egyptian Theater this weekend. And we'll get the exact times posted and let folks know for sure when they can plan on being there. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this weekend.
All righty. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye now.
Bye.
You've been listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. I want to thank Anne Laurent, who came by to say goodbye. She's leaving the city and moving back to her old community in New Mexico. We had senior planner Hannah Tyler in. She was in with Jason Glidden to talk about the special planning commission meeting coming up tomorrow. And then Recycle Utah director Carolyn Warr came by with her monthly update. And then Charlie Musselwhite, who is performing this weekend at the Egyptian Theater. He'll be bringing some blues, and that will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Thanks for listening to KPCW this morning.